the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Ravi Mariwala. Sri Ravi came to Bhagwan's fold at a very young age and was a part of the Balvikas program. He later got the golden opportunity to speak in front of Bhagwan in 1979 in Mumbai and in Prashanthi Nilayam. In 1982, he joined the Sri Satyasai Institute of Higher Learning and graduated with a gold medal in MBA. After his graduation, following Bhagwan's instructions, he joined the Sri Satyasai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences as one of the first staff members. Sri Ravi is fortunate to have had many interactions with Bhagwan and currently lives in North Carolina, United States. This talk was delivered at annual Silent Retreat, which was conducted between October 12th and 14th in 2018 at Sloatsburg, New York. Stay tuned, dear listeners. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some melodious songs by Sri Kavalam Srikumar from his concert in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 13th of April 2015. And at 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satyasai Divya Sandesh Jhari. And with that, over to Sri Ravi Mariwala.
Pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear fellow devotees, thank you for having me. Thank you also for giving me the opportunity to do what I'm good at, which is talk, and for cutting off your own choice and deciding to remain silent. So I have, in the way all of us human beings plan and think and, try to organize our ideas, I've tried to put together a lot of things to share with you, things that I've observed while being around Bhagwan. And I think every phase of our journey is seems to be important to us at the time when we are in that phase. So when I look back at the life that I led as a student, it almost looks like somebody else's life. But then there is some part of me that has seen and heard and lived those moments. And it is really, when you look at a picture like the one that we have in front of us, that we realize again and again the depth, the bond, the protection, and the grace that weaves together these various life experiences that we think we have decided to have. And in small and big situations and matters, only one thing comes out more and more clearly. And as we become more inclined to sensing and feeling and opening up to the more subtle aspects of our relationship with the world and with Swami, a whole new world opens up for us. And that's why, while I made a mental note that I should keep the first session light, you can see that I've already started to, try to go deep. But that is the nature of our relationship with Swami, and I think what I want to do today and ask you all to join me in is in celebrating the fact that all of us are disciples of the avatar. At the point of time when we came to Swami, I'm sure none of us had a clue about what we are getting into. I remember I was a teenager. I was least interested in God and But when I saw Swami in Dharmakshetra, me and my mom saw Swami in Dharmakshetra, which is a very large ashram of Swami in Mumbai. And at that point of time, I had started going in all different directions. And I don't want to dwell on that, but when I look back, I can see how Swami saved me from all of that. But the first meetings that we have with Swami are so important. And I want you all also to try to go back to your first meeting with Swami in whatever shape or form it happened. It's very important for us to connect with Him through the paradigm of our first meeting. And I remember Swami came down in Dharmakshetra, and I was the last person out of all those thousands of people. I planted myself at the end of the whole gathering, because I was not interested and I was being dragged there. I was a teenager. What was I doing there, I felt. And Swami came right down. There were barricades because there were so many throngs of people there. And He stood there and He did this. And when I looked at this picture, it's of course on a chair, but Swami stood there. He was so young at that time and He did this. There was nobody. It was me, the last person in the crowd. He looked around and He did that. And I don't know what came into me, that this disinterested teenager, I stretched out and touched His feet. And the only next memory that I have is telling my mother after the darshan, big words from a small boy. I said, "I think we found God." And I had no idea, I had read nothing about Swami. But if ever there were to be a God and you could sense and figure out that this is God, He would be doing that in the most natural way. And while most of us probably did not see what Swami was doing to us when we were meeting Him on the physical plane, there was a part of us that was able to relate to Him. And when I look back over these 3.5 decades of knowing Swami, the only thing that has happened to me is that that part of me that could sense and relate to the physical Swami is growing. And that's why I ask you all to join me in recollecting those moments that you had when you first came across Swami, whether it was in the form of a picture or your relatives or friends telling you about it, but that's when you made the connection. And it is that connection that we are here to celebrate, to relive. And it is that connection that has made us so different from all the thousands of people who are walking on the streets of Manhattan, chasing different things in their lives, which you and I also chased at one point. And it is that moment that has made our lives and will make our lives so much more enriched and different. So when we talk about discipleship, look at those images. It was Christ, Jesus Christ, with the 12 around Him. I don't think anybody at that point of time in Jerusalem thought that this is going to go on at least for 2018 years in the way it has. Those were the humble beginnings, the secret beginnings of what the Divine Spirit, the Holy Spirit, shared with those 12 fishermen, tax collectors, uneducated people. And when Christ made them His disciples, they did not know any better. They had no clue that one day the entire church would rest on their shoulders. And the actions, the words, the preaching, the gospels that they wrote would be handed down for generations and would inspire, would reveal and transform human beings for centuries to come. And on the left, if you look at that statue of Lord Buddha with his disciples, I'm sure nobody predicted that this prince would become the Buddha and then would create this great religion which has given such immense joy and peace to millions across the world and across time. And then if you look below at the image of Lord Shiva, and not many of you may know that it was Mother Parvati who is actually the greatest devotee of the Lord Shiva. You have to go back and read the Shiva Puran, and there are also beautiful videos nowadays about Shiva's life, and you can see there how tough it was for Mother Parvati to walk on this path. And it was not tough because spirituality is tough. It was tough for Mother Parvati because she had this desire to be the consort of Lord Shiva. And because Shiva is such a tough being, Shiva would never accept her. And she went through so much to become his disciple and then his consort. And superimposed on that is how Shiva taught the seven sages. And I think though we belittle ourselves and we don't put ourselves at that level, human beings, we always want to think that we are lower. But Swami came to replay that whole situation. One day we were sitting at his feet in the interview room, and he was upset about something we had done. And he was always upset with us, right? Because we were always doing something that was not, we were not living up to his expectations. So he was upset with us about something. And just to make conversation, I said, Swami, we are ordinary boys, please forgive us. And this memory is etched in my mind. In the interview room, there was this soft cushion for Swami's feet. And he got up on one foot and he raised his hand as if to beat me. And he said, you are not ordinary boys. And I hadn't realized, but I had helped him launch on this tirade. And he said, I rescued you. And of course, for a long time, I repented that I said those words. But he said, I rescued you from Mumbai. And for many years, Swami hadn't mentioned that I am from the city of Mumbai. For Swami, Mumbai was as bad as New York. And he said, I rescued you from Mumbai and you would have become a street dog, but I am going to make you a street light. And I said, one word in the wrong direction and here goes Swami. And he said, never say that you are ordinary boys. And I think the time has come for us, whether it is devotees or students, it doesn't matter. But let's not think of ourselves as ordinary. We have to celebrate being the disciples of Lord Shiva himself. We have to celebrate like those 12 disciples of Christ. In the last couple of weeks before Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa passed on, somebody brought a set of orange garments and kept it there as an offering. And Ramakrishna doled those out to these 12 disciples who became again the torchbearers of Ramakrishna's mission. The Sai Avatar is magnificent, and we have to wait and watch how it will unfold. But we know already that what he has given us and what he has done is much more than just sowing the seed or a spark within us. And there is this little story about Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. So just like we have these exchange programs nowadays, one day Vishwamitra went to visit the sage Vasishtha. And when he went to his ashram, he told Vasishtha, "I'm giving you as a gift 1,000 years of my penance, the fruit of 1,000 years of my penance." So Vasishtha said, "Thank you." Next year, sage Vasishtha went to the ashram of sage Vishwamitra. And when he received him, Vasishtha said, "I am giving you one moment of the fruit I have earned through satsang." So Vishwamitra was very perturbed in his mind. While he welcomed the sage Vasishtha, he was internally burning. And he said, "Vasishtha thinks of himself as so superior to me. I gave him the fruit of 1,000 years of penance. He is giving me the fruit of one moment of satsang." And when Vasishtha saw that Vishwamitra is very unhappy, they went to the Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was busy creating life on earth. And he said, "You know, these human beings, they started to do cloning and all of that. I am very busy now trying to preserve the gene pool. You go elsewhere." So they went to Lord Vishnu. Vishnu was scared. He said, "I don't want to answer these two great sages, because one of them may curse me if my answer displeases him." So they went to Lord Shiva. Shiva said, "It's time for my meditation. Don't disturb me." So they finally went to Sheshanag, the big snake in Indian mythology on whom the earth rests. And Sheshanag said, "Look, I have this huge burden of the earth. If you want me to think about the answer to your question, who is greater, 1,000 years of penance or one moment of satsang? First try lifting the earth off my back." So Vishwamitra tries and he says, "I'm going to apply 1,000 years of penance." Nothing happens. The earth remains on his neck. And it is at that time that Vasishtha applies one moment of the power of satsang and the earth rises up from the neck of Sheshanag. And that is the answer. So what Lord Sai came to do, he stood amongst us. He never let us walk to him. He walked amongst us. He picked up the letters. He answered frivolous questions. But through all of his physical presence amongst us, he was actually giving us this power of satsang. And as we meet here to talk more seriously in the next 2 days about what the term Sai means, satsang, irrespective of the stages of our growth, is something that is going to accompany us. Even when you reach the peak of spiritual learning, spiritual growth, you still need to create that atmosphere where your spirituality can thrive. I travel a lot for work, and I have repeated experiences of how the power of the environment that I am moving in affect the thoughts that I am having. And every now and then, when I forget to chant Brahmarpanam or think of Swami before I eat food from some restaurant, I am reminded of the fact that we are still so much dependent on our environment. And as compared to that, if you see the environments that Swami has created for us, it's really something, it's a matter of joy to think that we as adolescents remained in Puttaparthi at the most stormy period of our lives, not perturbed by worldly desire, but so focused on Swami, running around Him in circles. We just wanted to be more and more around Swami. And that itself tells us that that atmosphere that Swami created. And as you all know, Puttaparthi is, as Swami says, the place where you put apart the eye. Put apart the eye. And that is Puttaparthi. So Swami has created these environments. This is another such environment. I just arrived while you were doing bhajan, and I went up to my room, had a quick change of clothes. And as I came down, the trailing sound of the bhajan reminded me of Prashanti Nilayam, where sometimes when the akhand bhajan would be on, the hum of the bhajans, the devotees following the bhajan, was so powerful that it would get to you. While we are so caught up in our existential burdens and challenges, we sometimes forget the power of what we have right here. And that is what we are here to remind ourselves about. So as we walk through the three stages of action, feeling, and try to achieve self-knowledge, that satsang or the company of the holy, the company of the like-minded, is going to be so important for us. So moving on, where did the term Sai come from? Colloquially, Sai in some parts of India means mother, Sai, and there's a word called Ai in a language, in Maharashtrian language, which is called Marathi, where you say Ai and Sai. So when Swami used to tell us about the word Sai Baba, before this recent meaning of Sai as service, adoration, and illumination was provided by Swami during the 70th birthday. Before that, Swami used to always say, Sai is mother and Baba is father. And that really epitomizes this avatar, which is Shiva Shakti combined. He is not the angry avatar that Shirdi Baba sometimes conveyed he was. So Sai is the mother aspect and Baba is the father aspect. And I remember in many other interviews Swami used to tell us, Baba is being, awareness, bliss, Atma. And I want that we talk about this in subsequent talks, because while Swami introduced us to the bhajan and to His discourses, He has left such a rich heritage of spiritual knowledge around this word Atma. And as kids around Swami, all we could do in the interviews when Swami was speaking, when we would come out of the interview room, we would just tell each other, Hey, Swami used the word Atma 59 times today. That was the extent to which we could assimilate His spiritual teaching. But today, through the rich body of knowledge that Swami has left us through Radio Sai, we can actually try to walk that path and decipher where He was taking us through the word being, awareness, bliss, Atma. So why did the avatar come? In Indian mythology, they say that the avatar came to revive the Vedas, to eliminate evil. But Swami often told us that the avatar is the concretization of the yearning of His devotees. And this is what I want to talk to you about. That it is all love. Swami's path is only about love for God. While we may sometimes think that seva and jnana and bhakti, these are three different paths. For us as Sai devotees, we have a huge advantage. We don't have to try to think as generations later may have to think, whether Swami had a mole on His left cheek or right cheek. We all know it. Many of us have lived with Him, seen Him, touched Him, given Him frivolous or deep letters. We know Him. If I were to ask you to love Lord Jesus or Sri Krishna, you had to revive your memory of Lord Jesus or Lord Krishna or Shiva because you've never met them. You've never seen Him. If you were to ask the Vanaras, the monkeys who worked for Rama, love Sri Sathya Sai Baba, they would be at a loss to do that. For them, they could just love Sri Rama. Ram was their ideal. Similarly, if you ask a Sai devotee, love Ram, it's going to be very difficult. But for us, to love Sai is natural. And that is why we are here, to celebrate the fact that we were disciples of none other than the avatar Himself. And then, to make sure that we apply this path of love as we go forward. What does Swami do? What did Swami do during all the time that He interacted with us? He was doing a single thing for us. He was raising our consciousness. And that is why we come back to the Sai Center every weekend. We've never thought of it in these terms. But the thing that you are all gaining by participating in Sai activities, without any marketing, without any fees, the desire to go back to Parthi every year or every few years and spend thousands of dollars and then to go into a little 250 square feet room, leaving your 2,500 square feet houses here, is only because you are, without your knowing it, entering the no mind state. And I don't say this in a light way. I say it because I have started to realize that while I played as a student around Swami, what He was actually doing for us, without us knowing it, sometimes even denying it, was raising our consciousness. And the act of raising the consciousness of human beings who are at a lower level of consciousness is a huge task. is a huge challenge. Nobody can take up that challenge. As a student, I used to read a lot of books of different spiritual masters. One day I read this book about Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa and the fact that, and Swami used to also tell us this, that he was supposed to be the Shuddha avatar or pure avatar. He could never interact with people because he would become sick if some worldly person touched him. And one day when I was reading that book, I looked out and Swami was walking amongst the sevadas, and there were 3,000 people there, and he was walking amongst them, and each person was diving at Swami's feet. And I looked back at the book and I said, oh, so what is the meaning of this? That here are all these worldly people, me included, and we are constantly grabbing at Swami's feet. And we are sending him all our impure vibrations, our worldly vibrations. And here is this little man, and he is happily moving amongst us. What is he doing? How is he taking up all our negative vibrations? Where do they go? How does he manage them?
Gajananam, Gajananam, Bhutaganadi Sevitam, Kalpitha Jambu Bhalasara Bhakshitam, Umasutam, Shoka Vinash Karanam. Namami, 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 Vigneshwara Pada Pangajam. Satyam Shivam Sundaram Ritam Bhare Vasundharini Paramabhagyavati Ritam Bhare Vasundharini Paramabhagyavati Anadhare Sai Saradharakam Abhayavarad Shubha Samayamite Ritam Bhare Vasundharini Paramabhagyavati Nirupamam sama sundarame sai surabhila nama avataram Nirupamam sama sundarame sai surabhila nama avataram Nitya harita vrindavana bhuvitil மானவ சேவ நிரவ ஜீவ கருண்ய ஜாகர நிலவ சூரிய தேஜோமயமா போலிவ அநாதரே சாயி சநாதராக்கும் அபயவரத சுப சமயமேத்து ரிதம்பரே வசுந்தரே நீ பரம பாகவதி. கருணத்தன் காந்த விஸ்மயமே சாய் கதன விபஞ்சன சாரம் கருணத்தன் காந்த விஸ்மயமே சாய் கதன விபஞ்சன சாரம் சாது ஜனஹய சந்தாப விநாசக சாயி கிருபாலோ சரணம் அப்ரமேயாத்ம நிர்வ்ருதி கரணே ஆர்த்ரராகோதயமாம் மகிமே அநாதரே சாயி சநாதராக்கும் அபயவரத சுப சமயமீதே ரிதம்பரே வசுந்தரே நீ பரம பாகவதி அநாதரே சாயி சநாதராக்கும் அபயவரத சுப சமயமீதே ரிதம்பரே வசுந்தரே நீ பரம பாகவதி. சத்யம் சிவம் சுந்தரம்.
யூ ஆர் லிஸ்னிங் டு ரேடியோ சாய் தர்ஸ்டே லைவ். ஸ்டே டியூன்ட்.
ஹவ் இஸ் ஹி டேக்கிங் அப் ஆல் ஆர் negative vibrations? Where do they go? How does he manage them? And a few days later I got my answer when I read another book, which was about Sharada Devi, who is the consort of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. And it said in that book that unlike Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, who had to keep away from people because he would pick up their negative vibrations, she started opening it up to people, initiating a lot of the masses and the lay people. And her disciples started noticing that every time she allowed them to touch her feet or spend time with her, she would become sick for weeks on end. And eventually they had to stop her from getting too close to people and stop people from getting too close to her. That's when really it struck me that what is the untold, undescribed power of the avatar. And I really do not say this in a light of frivolous way, because this is what I think is going to happen to us over time. That you and me are going to become open and aware more and more of the true nature of Sai, of the true power and the benevolence that is packaged in that little body. You will see over the next 2 days that I have a lot of pictures of Swami, and I invite you to look at the pictures and to enjoy the pictures, because he is communicating with us all through these pictures. These pictures are so powerful. And I want you to sing with me. We'll just make it brief. This is a bhajan I have always enjoyed. And if you look at that picture, you can see that Swami is so different. He doesn't fit into any mold. We don't know what he is doing. And through every movement, through every motion of his body, he was actually changing our consciousness. He was sowing the seeds of true spirituality in us. So we'll sing just for a minute that beautiful bhajan. Sai Nath Dinanath Brahma Rupa Sadguru. निराकार हे आकार सत्य साई सद्गुरु ओंकार सद्गुरु निर्विकार सद्गुरु निर्विकार सद्गुरु Sadguru Sai Nath Dinanath Brahma Rupa Sadguru
Sai Nath
Dinanath Brahma Rupa Sadguru. So that bhajan actually epitomizes a lot of the undescribed glory of Swami. Sai Nath, Dinanath. Din in Hindi means impoverished, poor. But in Indian spirituality, Dinanath means, because we are all impoverished, until we have realized and gained that independence, that true independence that a spiritually enlightened soul has, we are all Dinas. So he is the Nath or the Lord of the Dina. And if you look at his life, it unfolded in three main aspects, through epic events, through the creation of the Lingam from his body. I don't know how many of you know, but in the Madhumalai forest with a few students, one day Swami said, I will show you the moon, and he brought the moon down. There are numerous examples of the power of divinity that he manifested. How many of you know that there are three recorded instances of Swami reviving the dead? How many of you know that there are three such instances? And the one incident that I learnt of later, of course there is the Kovan incident, which is the most famous. But then when I learnt of about the other one, which happened in the Mandir, which is about Radha Krishna, this person called Radha Krishna, you should read about the way Swami in such a casual manner revived him. His body was smelling. The wife and the daughter came and told Swami, Swami, this, let's move him. The mandir is starting to have this foul stench. And Swami would avoid them. And eventually, after 3 days, when Swami revived him, Swami went into the room, just closed the door. And when he opened the door, Radha Krishna was sitting up with a cup of coffee in his hand. I mean, even when you want to perform a miracle, do you have to make it so casual, Swami? That is really what we have to repeatedly remind ourselves about. And this thought has started occurring to me, that Swami often gave us bearable glimpses of divinity. Bearable. Because you and I couldn't have taken it. And as I read more about Shirdi Baba, I see that he tried to do the same. People could not accept the fact that Shirdi Baba can just heal by a wave of his hand. So he had to give them some leaves and grind it up and make out as if he is treating them with Ayurvedic medicines to reduce the blow on the mind. The human mind, so used to the gadgets and the gross things that we live with, cannot comprehend the actions of the avatar. From an empty earthen pot, bringing down colossal amounts of vibhuti. Even if you just remind yourself of this, it elevates your consciousness. Imagine what must have happened to those people who were there and were able to witness that event year after year. And that is why, because those glimpses were limited and were Swami seized to show those in public, that divinity started to unfold and give glimpses in a different form. And while the individual glimpses always continued to happen, and they still happen, the societal impact that the divine took, the shape that the divinity took, came through in the form of societal improvement through the water project, through the divine hospitals, the temples of healing. And I always consider it my duty to mention a little bit about the hospitals, because whenever I would speak in front of Swami, I would come with all these miracles and instances and experiences. And you know, as kids, you had to follow that order because you'd get thrown off in front of 20,000 people. So I would come prepared with that, and then Swami would listen to my talk for like 2 minutes and then say, "Chal chal, ipudu hospital gurinchi cheppu. Now stop all this and tell the group, tell the public about the hospital." And then my head would go into a dizzy because I hadn't thought about saying anything about the hospital. So whenever I talk, I make it a point to mention a little bit about the hospital, because that really was the shape that that divine energy took. The same divine energy that manifested the lingams, that controlled the weather, that revived the dead. For the modern man, for the later devotees, it took the shape of the educational institutions, the medical miracles, the water projects, and so on. And to pause and think, now that we've said all this about this divine being, my reality, he says, I can solve any problem, however naughty. I am beyond the reach of the most intensive inquiry and the most meticulous measurement. Science, we always want to know what is the end and the beginning of a thing. Fossils, how many million years old are those fossils? What is the extent of the universe? When is the sun going to die? As if anyone is going to be around when the sun dies. None of us are going to be there. And yet, the avatar is relating to us in the terms that we are familiar with. And then very beautifully he adds, only those who have recognized my love. It is not love as in the scriptures, or the love in the Bible, or the love in the Mahabharata. Those who have recognized my love and experienced that love can assert that they have glimpsed my reality. And that is why I say unto all of you that we are extraordinarily blessed, that you don't have to think what was the shade of the color of the gown that Swami wore on his birthday. It was white. You don't have to think whether his mole was on the left or the right. He gave himself to us. For a period of time, we thought that the Sai Avatar has come for somebody else, And there'll be some saints or some more deserving people who will come to the Lord. But the Lord went away after coming to us. And now we cannot escape that responsibility, that feeling of blessedness, but the feeling of responsibility that it is me and you He came for none other. Out of all the billions of people, He toiled, He built up His mission only for the sake of you and me. And that's a very, very embarrassing thought, because you and I don't want to accept that we bear the mantle of responsibility of being His disciples. And this is how a traditional master teaches. But the way Swami taught us was like this. He never preached to us. He literally took all of us on His lap and explained the great spiritual truths to us. And the students were the luckiest of the lucky to that extent, because He allowed them literally to rub shoulders with Him. These pictures are etched in our consciousness. The simplicity of the Lord. You know, those floors in the hostel that you see on the picture on the right are not even tiled. But that was our beloved hostel. And this is the impact of that love. Without social media, emails, Facebook in the middle. Truly the power of love available for all of us to see and to remind ourselves about. And I want to spend a couple of minutes on this, because there is a experience we had in the hostel. A lot of you know about this, and I want to focus on the unseen, on the subtle, and on consciousness that Swami has built through His life and through His mission. And there is, fortunately for us all, Swami gave us these glimpses, otherwise we would have never known. All of you have heard of Dr. Frank Baranowski from the University of Arizona. And when he came to Swami in July 1977, he had heard of Swami, but not many of you may know that even after hearing of Swami, he was not interested in coming to see Sai Baba. But then he went to a devotee's house for one bhajan. He got a little bored of that bhajan, so he retired to a room in the upstairs of that house. And he kept the room dark, and he was sitting there. And all of a sudden, an unlit candle on the table got lit up. And he was shocked. And the bhajan was going on below in the devotee's house, and this candle suddenly came to life. And that's when he started to think that maybe this is a sign from Sai Baba, and he came to Whitefield. There was this world conference going on at that time. And he writes in his memoirs that he was not impressed when he saw Swami the first time. First meetings. I love to read about the first meetings of individuals, about ourselves. And he says the first meeting he didn't see anything great. And then the next morning when he went for that Nagar Sankirtan, this is the old Vrindavan. And Swami used to come out there on top, and they would be singing there, and Swami would come out. It would just be early dawn, and with the haze in the sky behind Swami, Swami would stand there and take aarti, And that's when he noticed the aura around Bhagwan for the first time. And he has mentioned that he has measured the auras of the Queen of England, the Pope, so many other people. And he said nobody's aura, including the yogis in the Himalayas, went beyond 3 to 5 feet. And he rubbed his eyes in disbelief when he saw what was happening around Swami. And the next day when he attended a discourse that Swami was giving, the auras broke all limits. And much to the discomfort of the people around him, Dr. Frank Baranowski got up from his seat, and the sevadals, as they are even today, started to tell him, "Sit down, Swami speaking." And he couldn't hold himself, but he walked all the way out of the ashram and went to the Whitefield station, railway station. And it was until there that he could see Swami's aura unbroken. And why do we need to remind ourselves of this? We all know this story. But what we fail to realize is that that aura is the one that is today and now amongst us. It is that aura that we call upon when as a group we do bhajan and you get a lot of joy. That joy is being caused by that aura that was at one point localized around the body of the Lord. But what he did in effect when we met him, when we spent time with him, was implant a piece of that divine, compassionate aura in each one of us. And when we meet and when we rejoice and remember and recollect him, we are actually rekindling that divine aura that Dr. Frank Baranowski saw that day in Whitefield. And that's how Swami must have looked in the early dawn. And the other thing I want to quickly mention without making it too serious is the value of the mudras. So what was he doing with his hands? Imagine if you wanted to become or pose as a spiritual master today. How would you differentiate yourselves? There is virtually no way for a person to differentiate himself from the clutter and the noise and the advertisements that are there. I work for a large company, it's a Fortune 100 company, and we are all the time talking about how we can differentiate ourselves from other similar companies. And it's very hard. With all the money that we have, it's very hard to differentiate even an entire company. And how did Satya Sai Baba differentiate himself? Look at the enormous creativity that only God can bring out, that only God can manifest. People have been struggling with hairstyles, with hairdos, with branded clothes and belts and shoes and heels and all of that. And if you ask me, the symbol of Sai was these unique gestures that he would make. And Dr. Frank Baranowski saw that every time Swami did this, the smoke that he saw coming out, and he calls it like a smoke, a vision of clouds, would grow and move. And he says that when Swami materialized Vibhuti for a little child and rubbed it on her hand, he saw the pink aura of Swami, which was actually otherwise very extensive and diffusing away. He saw that converging into that child's arm as Swami rubbed Vibhuti on her arm. And that's why I call it bearable glimpses. Because if all of you with your bare eyes would have been able to see this, you couldn't have held on to this. And oftentimes when I meet other Sai students, one of the things we share, which is so unique, not recorded anywhere, is the fact that when Swami moved amongst us, again, very, very casually, he didn't have to chant a mantra or close his eyes for 15 minutes to get that power. But when he looked into our eyes, each one of us without exception knew that he knows everything about us from the last time he looked in our eyes until now. And that was very discomforting, but we got very used to it. And I remember as an adolescent, sometimes not doing the right thing, not thinking the right thoughts. And when we walked into the mandir, 300 boys marching in white clothes, and we knew it's 10 more minutes for Swami to come out, and then you had a choice. With all this baggage and my conscience biting, should I still go to that place and sit where I'm sure Swami will come to and take a look at me? Or should I just today, because of all this baggage that I'm carrying, just silently escape and stay a little back? And I remember sometimes making the wrong decision and planting myself right in the front. And Swami would come, and with his big eyes, I knew that he was not happy. But then, he was very pleased with the fact that though my conscience was biting, I had made the decision to expose myself to him. And these are incredibly, incredibly subtle learnings that we had. Though we were young in age, we had not read the scriptures, we had no education in spirituality, but he taught us these great truths. And it is truly amazing as I think back to those days, that not only did he know everything about everybody, at least the few of us who were there, 400-500 of us, even if we want to limit his divine knowledge to say, yeah, he knew about just the few people who were there, that's fine. But he knew everything. We were all open books for him. And it is less a memory of his power, but the joy in my heart when I tell you this is the remembrance, is the memory of his compassion. Even when I had made big mistakes, but when I exposed myself to him, when I prayed to him, Swami, I made a really big mistake this time. How are you going to react to this, Swami? Please forgive me. On one such occasion, and I'm sharing this with you with a lot of humility, and that is a quality of Sai devotees, that we accept our mistakes in public. When I had made a really big mistake, and I prayed for days on end, said, Swami, you say repentance is the only... And I landed up in front of Swami, and I had a choice to hide a little bit from him or to expose myself to him. And I went right up to him. And I just want to tell you this in summary. You know what he did? Divinity is so spontaneous. It is so creative. It is... None of us can bind it or hold it or define it or limit it. And I just think that was in response to the extent of my intensity. It was a public meeting. It was Diwali. There were thousands of devotees outside, and the boys were all there. Swami saw me perspiring, and he took his own kerchief and in front of everybody wiped my face with that kerchief. And nobody knew what had happened as a background to that point. And only I knew that by no means was I deserving even to come close to the Lord. But not just that he took me close, he used his own handkerchief to wipe my face in public because he wanted to bless me and to reiterate the fact that I like repentance. I like prayer. I like intense prayer for repentance. So as we talk about these mudras, all of us know that we love to watch him. Today if you look at videos, you can't have a person who's sitting on a chair, very dull environment, nothing else around him, just sitting on the chair. Yes, very nice hair and all that. But how long are you going to look at him? And as kids, I remember, we would sit on that, sit there looking at him for three and a half hours. And there would be a music program or something going, but you could not even look away from him. And at that time, these mudras, these gestures were actually working on us. And those are the other mudras which we are all familiar with, the ones that we actually yearn for, right? Because when all the forces of the world are working against us, the Anugraha mudra with the smile of the Lord alone can relieve us of all the tensions. Unlike the rest of the world, we have a place to go to, which is our altar. You can submit your problems at the lotus feet of the Lord whom you know and love, and your problems are done away with. And a lot of memories are coming up, but I'm holding myself back because I can see we need to close. But this is the most powerful mudra. This is the Shaktipatha mudra, where the Lord, this is really rare, where Swami actually relays or communicates or infuses that divinity when he wants to and when he so chooses to, through the touch at the base of the head. So I want to talk to you a little bit about spiritual hunger. Yeah, let's stop at that. I'm sorry. So all of us came, and I spoke to you about the first meeting that we had with Swami. And that is because of this letter that Swami has written at some point, right? Which is that you and I signed a contract with God some time way back, some centuries, some 50, 100 births ago, when you accosted divinity in some shape or form and you told that divine being, I could not be born as Hanuman or the Vanaras with Rama. I could not be born as Luke or Peter or Matthew at the time of Christ. I was not even Saint Francis of Assisi at a later point. I was not Tukaram or Surdas. But I want to come along with you. And for God's sake, don't make me an elephant. That is for Sai Gita. But I want to be a student or a devotee. And I want to come when you come, Lord. And in this birth, we've done our PhDs or MBAs or, and we've forgotten that contract that we entered into with the Lord. And that's what this letter tells you about. That spiritual hunger that you and I have, though we at times deny it, though we at times like to minimize it and or hide it, that is what you and I are here for today. I left my family in North Carolina to come here because of this spiritual hunger. But I don't know it. I forget it. In the plane, I start looking at useless things on my cell and forget. I am going for the retreat because of this spiritual hunger. Because of that initial meeting that I had with Swami in Dharmakshetra, when I felt that if anybody is God, this is God. I forget that I entered into that contract with Him many births ago. And that is why we meet here today. And if you see what the Lord Krishna has said about a spiritual master, can one of you read it out loudly? Yeah. Go ahead. Slowly. I think this audience is more educated than I estimated. I probably underestimated some of you. You read it out as if you know it already, right? Can you also read out the meaning? Slowly.
Learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire for him with reverence and render service unto him. Such an enlightened saint can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth.
That is such a beautiful verse that Lord Krishna taught to Arjuna. The only way for spiritual knowledge to be communicated is when we serve the Master, when we sit humbly at His feet. And that is what I want to dwell on over the next 1.5 days. That it is not the equivalent of a college education. And as human beings, we love to model things. We like to replicate our learning. But we've met our match because spirituality is completely different from anything that the world has seen or understood so far. We have to sit silently, humbly, and serve the Master. And that is what you and I had an opportunity to do. You and I cannot serve Lord Rama or Shri Krishna. But you and I have already had the opportunity to love and serve Lord Sai. So we are truly blessed. And I'll stop with this here today and let you all have a good night's sleep. But keep in mind that Sai has taken us to a no-mind state. And though we don't like to use all these fancy, difficult words, the reason you are here is because of Him infusing that spirituality in us all. When He kept on saying in His discourses, Atma, Atma, Atma. And the foundation of that atmic journey towards self-realization was laid in His presence. When He taught us to chant the name, to read good books, to be in satsang. And it is that movement towards self-realization which we have all embarked on, and that we have to keep that fire burning. Thank you and Sai Ram.
नारायणौ भजे नारायणौ लक्ष्मी नारायणौ भजे नारायणौ नारायणौ भजे नारायणौ। లక్ష్మీ నారాయణు భజే నారాయణ హరి నారాయణ భజే నారాయణ లక్ష్మీ నారాయణ భజే నారాయణ వృందావనస్థితం నారాయణ వృందావనస్థితం నారాయణ దేవృందైరభీష్టుతం నారాయణ వృందావనస్థితం నారాయణ దేవృందైరభీష్టుతం నారాయణ దినకర మధ్యగం నారాయణ దినకర మధ్యగం నారాయణ దినకర మధ్యగం నారాయణ దినకర మధ్యగం నారాయణ దివ్య కనకాంబరధరం దివ్య కనకాంబరధరం నారాయణ నారాయణ భజే నారాయణ లక్ష్మీ నారాయణ భజే నారాయణ పంకజలోచనం నారాయణం పంకజలోచనం నారాయణం భక్త సంకట మోచనం నారాయణం పంకజలోచనం నారాయణం భక్త సంకట మోచనం నారాయణం కరుణాపయోనిధి నారాయణ కరుణాపయోనిధి నారాయణ భవ్య శరణగదనిధి భవ్య శరణగదనిధి నారాయణ నారాయణ భజే నారాయణ లక్ష్మీ నారాయణం భజే నారాయణం రక్షిత జగత్రయం నారాయణం రక్షిత జగత్రయం నారాయణం చక్ర శిక్షితాసురచయం నారాయణం రక్షిత జగత్రయం నారాయణం చక్ర శిక్షితాసురచయ నారాయణం అజ్ఞాననాశకం అజ్ఞాననాశకం నారాయణం అజ్ఞాననాశకం నారాయణం శుద్ధ విజ్ఞానభాసకం శుద్ధ విజ్ఞానభాసకం నారాయణౌ నారాయణౌ భజే నారాయణౌ లక్ష్మీనారాయణౌ భజే నారాయణౌ నారాయణౌ భజే నారాయణౌ లక్ష్మీనారాయణౌ భజే నారాయణౌ నారాయణ 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 సాయి నారాయణ 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 సాయి నారాయణ 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 సాయి నారాయణ 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 నారాయణం భజే నారాయణం భజే నారాయణం భజే నాగేంద్ర హారాయ త్రిలోచనాయ భస్మాంగరాగాయ మహేశ్వరాయ నిత్యాయ శుద్ధాయ నిత్యాయ శుద్ధాయ దిగంబరాయ తస్మై నకారాయ నమః శివాయ ఓం 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 నమః శివాయ.